The past.
Hunting for replicants.
The present.
Hunting for your identity.
The future.
And hunting for terrorists.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer
again. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make him my day.
All right, Mr.
DeMille,
I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Rosebud. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new reel of COL Movies. I am Jeff, because I rarely ever say my name on this show. And I would like to introduce my cantankerous co-hosts. Oh, that's a lot of C's. Ray and Steve. How you guys doing?
Doing okay.
Ow, I'm coming out of being beat down for screwing up this week. Ow.
We'll get back to that later. So,
ow.
Somebody is going to get a little spoiled for sure. Of course, everybody should know, spoiler alert, there may be spoilers. Wait a minute. No, there will be spoilers.
There shall be spoilers.
There shall be spoilers. That should be our motto. COL Movies, there shall be spoilers. That's our new tagline. So at least that's what I'm calling it for. Mm-hmm. Let's start off with little news. Yes. I really want to get like a COL News or something like that little spot. But I am. Thanks. Anyways, Michael Bay to produce Zombies versus Robots. Wait, what?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, we've got Cowboys and Aliens coming out and now Michael Bay's got this movie called, he has scooped up the rights to Zombies versus Robots. I guess it's a comic book series, which I've never read, but I like robots and I like zombies. I don't know. Two great tastes great together, but we'll see.
I know plants and zombies.
Plants versus zombies, yeah, that's a popular one right now.
I've got that.
That's a game.
I beat that one.
Did you?
I beat that actually. Yeah, I did.
I have not completed it, but I'm one who's not necessarily a completionist on some games.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, I just thought it was kind of funny that, you know, it's not zombies and robots; it's zombies versus robots. You know, so I just thought it was an interesting little blurb about this thing. It's just kind of ridiculous, and we'll see how it develops. It makes me interesting. I'm going to see if I can find a copy of the comic maybe and check it out just to see what it's about.
That sounds like a good idea. In fact, I'm going to check the Comixology store here and see if it's there. Yeah.
So, yeah, and this next story, oh, God. Okay, I don't know what it is with American, filmmakers or movie studios, but okay, how many of you? I don't know if you are familiar with this, Jeff. If you were old enough to watch this when it was on TV, but do you remember the cartoon Star Blazers?
No.
Yes, okay. I do.
We
talked about this in the Japanese version.
Yeah. We talked about the Japanese version coming out. So for those that don't know, there was a Japanese anime in the, was it the late 70s called Space Battleship Yamato? Right. And that was in the same era that, you know, Speed Racer and Gigantor and all the kind of first wave invasion of Japanese anime into America. It was brought over to America, but of course the title was changed to be more American friendly. So it was changed to the name to Star Blazers was the title here in the United States. There has since been a Japanese live action Space Battleship Yamato released, and for all I can see from the little clips and stuff that I've seen, it looks absolutely amazing. But of course, it's in Japanese.
Seriously, honestly, this looks like a movie version of Kamen Rider or Super Sentai.
Yeah.
More towards a Kamen Rider, thinking more of the Kabuto movie.
Yeah, but what I find funny is they want, just like they did with like Let Me In, and they're doing with the girl with the dragon tattoo. They're making an thinking of making an American version of this. So reshooting the entire thing.
So are they going to?
We should probably think more like The Ring. We should think more like The Ring, probably, or The Grudge. Yeah, those right. Yeah.
Right. It's going to be reshot with American actors. And to me, I just, I'm like, why? I guess Americans just are too lazy to read subtitles. I don't know.
Could you see today, in today's age, a subtitled movie out in the theaters doing really well? Let's be real, you know.
I think a Star Blazers movie would, only because it's got a pretty large fan base. I mean, if it's got a fan base big enough for them to consider remaking it into a whole other movie just for us, I would think that, you know, it's not like nothing that nobody's ever heard of before. I mean, I know lots of people that are Star Blazers or Yamato fans, you know. I know a lot of people that are chomping at the bit just to see the Japanese version of this. So I'm still
looking forward to the Gatchaman movie before I be looking forward to this, but
yeah,
that's just me. But I did enjoy Star Blazers as a child.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
Yeah. And overall, I'm usually a fan of any Japanese superhero show or anything similar to that. I like a lot of some of those sci-fi animes. So, I mean, like Evangelion was amazing to me. I mean, it made me want to get the entire series on DVD, which unfortunately I couldn't afford, so I instead rented it off Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And thought it was just amazing and interesting. And the one thing I always find whenever something is translated over, something about it just doesn't work whenever us Americans try to essentially Americanize any of these things. Something they do just makes it too cheesy, or the cheese is actually at the same level, but just the way you do it, where because there's a lot of things, like if you're watching, honestly, like if you compare like Super Sentai versus Power Rangers, it actually feels like Super Sentai is more cheesy than Power Rangers, but the way that it's done in the Super Sentai still makes it a lot cooler for some reason. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of the comparison that we've made before about making something campy.
Right.
You know, like we don't do a good job in American cinema these days, at least, or, you know, or television of making something campy.
Like,
you know,
like
it just
Barbarella,
either
amazing
is,
camp.
Yeah. Right. But we're not good at just, you know, we're not good at making things naturally campy. I don't know. It's just something in our genes. But I'll be honest with you that if I'm going to – I'll tell you what would make me more excited than anything would actually to be a, see a Robotech live action
movie. Ooh, that would be cool.
But, yeah, you know, cool. Haven't heard anything
Star Blazers,
about that.
I think Star Blazers would be a good test run for that, you know, kind of to see – testing the waters to see how well people react to this kind of movie. But, yeah, just a little blurb about it and Before we leave the month of February, and especially because this coming weekend, Drive Angry is going to be released, I thought this was a little funny. Not really news, but a little – just a funny little segment here. It turns out that the title of the Nicolas Cage action grindhouse thriller Drive Angry was inspired and taken from the movie Groundhog Day.
nice.
Yes. So if you follow the link that's going to be posted, there is the section of the movie Groundhog Day, which is actually one of my favorite sections of the movie, where Bill Murray steals the groundhog and takes off in a truck and ends up driving it off a cliff. But there's a little blurb about a minute and 30 seconds in where he's like, "Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry." And I guess that's where the Oz of Drive Angry got the title of their movie. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Not to mention ironic.
Groundhog Day.
No, I didn't. But I'm just going to say it's pretty ironic that that comes up because Groundhog Day comes up later today in the show.
Oh, yeah. Hey, did we forget to mention Wrath of the Titans? Did I miss that conversation?
Oh, yeah. What? It's just because I'm so disgusted by it, I skipped over it.
I agree. I can't.
And so, I guess I've been looking all over the place, and I guess now the official name for converting a movie to 3D is post conversion because it's done in post production.
Right. They would have learned from the first. You think they would have learned?
Please, this is Hollywood. They don't learn anything.
And
Basically, what we're getting to here, we haven't really said it, is Wrath of the Titans, which is going to be the sequel to the much-loved Clash of the Titans remake that was released.
The remake, not the original,
yes. The sequel is also going to be post-converted into 3D. So this is a giant WTF moment, like A, that they're making a sequel, and B, that they're going to, again, do something that they got lambasted for the first one in doing.
But the...
not shooting it in 3D.
But the post-conversion process is so vastly improved since the last time we did this. That it's going to be so much better and actually look like it was filmed in 3D.
Yeah.
Says Hank Hill.
Bollocks. Yeah. Bollocks.
Jesus Christ. I mean, this, I think you're right. It's very appalling and is one of those things where you kind of want to block it from your mind. It's one of those things where I think that we should absolutely protest going to see this movie.
Uh-huh.
Actually want to see it, but don't actually pay a dime or a cent. Vote with your dollars, folks, in Wrath of the Titans to show that despite actors or anything they try to do, post-conversion sucks ass. And plus, 3D's just hasn't quite worked for anything but Avatar so far.
Mm-hmm.
Things have been
Of course, in the article... the director tries to justify it.
Yeah.
Did y'all read that?
He's going for a grittier look. I want Gladiator with fantastical creatures. You know, it's like, that's what I'm going for. Well, you know what? I seriously doubt that even with regular cameras, he's going to get Gladiator with fantastical creatures in it.
Yeah. I do enjoy the description, though, in the Cinema Lin article. Thanks to the success of Avatar, the studio decided that they wanted to add $4 on every ticket.
Yeah.
And the result was a dark, flat, shitty mess that nobody was happy with. Now, with the sequel coming out, one would think that they'd know better this time around. Apparently, they don't.
Yeah. Nobody learns. So. Yeah, no.
Brilliant.
Not interested.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm being a little distracted because on this page there's a ad for Evangelion 2.22.
Yes, it's coming out.
Anyways, that's a side note. Last but not least, a little something that this just in fact, about like 2 or 3 minutes before we got connected to record the show, I saw this on Cinnamon Blend's Twitter feed. Jake Gyllenhaal and Garrett Hedlund among actors shortlisted for The Bourne Legacy. So apparently Matt Damon's out. So they're looking for somebody new.
We had that story before. We knew that Matt Damon was not going to be in the next one. So
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But at least we've got a couple actors who are in the shortlist. So who do you think should be on here, Jake Gyllenhaal or Garrett Hedlund? We've seen these last in, or will be seen in the source code for Jake Gyllenhaal, and Garrett Hedlund was on Tron Legacy.
Right. Well, if you the article, there's actually more than just those two named. You've got Gyllenhaal, Hedlund, Taylor Kitsch, Kellen Lutz, and strangely, the other name on the list is Tobey Maguire.
Really?
Yes. No.
Really?
So. Wait.
How did he get on that short list?
I don't know.
I mean, love you, Toby. You've got your place and everything. As an actor, you know, I like him as an actor and everything, but as Jason Bourne.
Right. Well, the article does go and say, it says Tobey Maguire, who with a skinny frame made for a good Spider-Man, but might be a little out of place as a CIA-trained killing machine. So
I'd be down for Kellan Lutz. I wouldn't mind seeing that for 2 hours.
And I'm not recognizing the name. Where have we seen him before?
He's in the Twilight Saga, but he's the beefy vampire.
Where we haven't seen him.
Search him. You'll see what I mean.
Right. Yeah, all right. Who here has seen anything from the Twilight Saga?
I have seen the first one.
Like I told you, he's the beefy vampire.
Yeah.
But, Steven, you didn't say if you actually saw the movies.
I saw the first one.
So I'm the only one who was good and didn't go see him.
Well, like we talked about before, like I fell for the first one just to see it. I didn't see it. I saw it on rental, let's be honest, because I was not going to fight all the 14-year-old girls for it.
Yeah, I rented it on iTunes when I saw it. So
brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You guys just got extra points to your gay card. Anyways, where were we?
Uh-huh.
That, my friends, is the news. So let's move on to the past.
I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. I gotta get back in time.
Back in time, we go back to 1982, where we saw the movie Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? I mean, sorry, Blade Runner. directed by Ridley Scott, starring Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Sean Young, and somebody else who I'm not going to mention at the moment because I'd like to comment about that later. But I just kind of threw him in there. It is loosely based off of Philip K. Dick's short story, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But the title actually comes from the book by Alan Norris called The Blade Runner. William Burroughs wrote a screenplay based on the Norris book and a novella entitled Blade Runner the Movie. Ridley Scott bought the rights for the title, but not the screenplay or the book. Burroughs' composition defines a Blade Runner as a person who sells illicit surgical or illegal surgical instruments. No. So, so we've got a little bit of this, a little bit of that thrown together to create one of the most amazing sci-fi films ever.
Well, I mean, I think you just defined... You defined a lot of things of this movie about talking about a mishmash.
Right.
I mean, the production was a mishmash. There was a ton of drama in the production. I never realized until I was, putting this trivia in here that there was just this huge amount of tension and animosity between the crew and Ridley Scott. They didn't like him. He made some comment about American film crews not working as hard as British ones, and so they all kind of got pissed off at him, and they went as far to like have t-shirts made where they had these really, really kind of nasty and blunt little sayings on them. I didn't put them all in here, but it was just sounded like it was a really uncomfortable time shooting this movie. In fact, I heard that and this was by watching some of the making of documentaries, that Harrison Ford and Ridley Scott didn't talk to each other for 20 years after this movie was made. Because they were just not speaking terms with each other.
Well, and a lot of that also had to do with the voiceover stuff that I'm sure we'll get to talking about with the theatrical release.
Yeah. You got a production mishmash. You've got, and this is probably one of the things I find the most interesting about it is the fact that it's a look at, and it's always interesting to see how at one point in time either an author or a screenwriter or a director had a particular vision of what the future held for a certain area. And in this place, you're looking at Los Angeles. It's supposed to be 2019. Which, scary enough, is only 8 years away. So you look at Los Angeles, and it's been completely kind of turned into this mishmash of Japanese, Chinese, Asian sort of influence on the city, which, you know, I know there's a heavy, or there was at least, coming right, you know, out into World War II and out of World War II, there was a large Asian population in California. There still is. But I just always find it interesting that that was going to be the dominant influence in this movie as far as the vision of the future, which actually this is going off topic a little bit, but I don't know if you guys are all Firefly fans. It was the same thing. Chinese and Japanese were like the largest influence on culture in the future. So,
well,
I find that interesting.
How much of the population are they a percentage of?
Well, yeah, in terms of China, yeah, humongous. So,
yeah.
So that kind of makes sense as to why, like in Firefly, people are speaking English and Chinese. And, you know, I don't know about you, but in Firefly, when they cursed and they went into like Mandarin, long tirade of Mandarin, and some of it was just some weird little saying. It wasn't even actually cursing. It worked really well. And this, and the same type of thing on here, where the voiceovers were, or the language that was spoken was a mismatch of English, Spanish, and Japanese.
Well, well, I don't know if I should say the name of the guy who plays the character, since you want to talk about it later.
Yeah.
Yes, but the character Gaff, when he speaks, every word in his sentence is a different language. So if you read it, it's like the first word is Japanese, the second word is Chinese, the third word is German, the fourth word is Hungarian, and that's when he talks about the whole city speak, you know, that it's a mashup of all these different languages. That he's literally speaking, you know, 8 different languages in that sentence, you know. So
that is talent.
It's the internationalization of society.
Yeah. It's a very gritty, dark, wet, probably what I would consider the perfect blend of science fiction and film noir. To me, mm-hmm. You know, the gritty, dark kind of detective movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very Sin City, and very Sin City kind of feel with, you know, everybody's either a cop or a hooker or a stripper or a con on the street, you know, kind of.
Yeah. There are no normal everyday people in this movie. It's everyone's right. Some sort of archetype.
You got the pretty businesswoman who crosses her legs and smokes seductively and has the big old fur coat with the big thing behind her head.
Yeah, well, Sean Young's character is straight up just plucked right out of like 1940s film noir and stuff in this movie. I mean, her makeup, her hair, her clothing, I mean, everything's just like...
Mind if I smoke?
Yeah.
It won't affect the test.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, the most random thing related to the future was the fact that there was ample housing.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, empty places.
One big building, nobody was but this one guy.
Right.
Well, the kind of weird thing about that is, if you notice in the movie, that I mean, it's the city itself is very crowded. You know, all the scenes with people, there's a lot of people usually. There's a couple scenes where they're, you know, empty street or whatever. But for the most part, I mean, it's a pretty bustling city. And for them to say, oh, yeah, there's, you know, not a housing shortage. This whole building's empty. And, you know, everything's – they go from that to everything looking like Detroit, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of interesting mashup. Obviously, I specifically requested that we watch the theatrical release, and I did that for a reason. Mainly because the theatrical release is got this voiceover in it, which caused a huge amount of controversy. Talk about drama laden. This production, like, I guess Ridley Scott and the producer were fired at one point, and the two other producers took over and tried to finish editing it. And they decided that the movie, after showing it off to a couple test audiences, that they were confused and needed a voiceover from Harrison Ford.
Which is taking...
Yeah.
But most of that was taking more from kind of the film noir feel, where during the film noir, you would have like what the guy was thinking as a voiceover during it and kind of explaining some things that were going on. Like, they take a look at those like film noir whenever they that category comes up on Whose Line Is It Anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a little chatting scene, then they turn towards the audience and have this aside. Well, that's the same thing in this movie, except instead of him actually looking at the camera and talking directly to you, it's this voiceover.
Right. It's an inner monologue, basically.
And this movie is very much a film noir, a future film, a sci-fi film noir. One of the things that I liked but didn't like was I didn't like how dark the movie was, like light-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Not like it was a dark, scary movie or something like that. But because there wasn't much light into it, in it, and the way the light worked or the light that was there was used, it didn't feel quite right for me for a film noir. Like, there was just something off on it. But also, this is not like the typical film noir time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't really filmed film noir, though, because there would have been those kinds of things you're talking about. It was almost like post-converted film noir, yeah. You know, with those voiceovers kind of, you know what I mean? Like, aside from the fact that the whole controversy over the those parts, you know, or over the voiceovers, which I think is just juicy backstage gossip, kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very Kathy Griffin would love to hear this kind of crap, you know, kind of thing. But it's like the, you know, that Harrison Ford was, you know, intentionally trying to make it sound bad so they wouldn't use it. And they had to threaten him, you know, kind of to do better, or, you know, they would fire him and, oh, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just sounds so cool, you know.
everything about the production of this film, from financing all the way through post-production, was drama. Yeah. You know, they had to fight to get financing for it. It was financed through like three different companies who all ended up fighting over rights of the movie. There just was not one part of this film that wasn't drama laden in some way, shape, or form. It's pretty crazy. And I guess I could see where you're coming from, Jeff, as far as I think the darkness in the film, the way it was shot, was, you know, it was totally an intentional choice by the cinematographer. Because one of the things I don't know how many times I've seen this movie, but you notice you never can tell if it's daytime, nighttime, all looks the same. And I think that is partly supposed to be a statement about how, like, okay, when this movie came out in the very early 80s, you know, smog was a huge thing in L.A. where it was like, you know, everybody complained about the quality of the air and how bad it was and how polluted it was and how you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And I think this was just sort of like, if things keep going the way they are, this is what L.A. is going to look like in, you know, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to go from this, you know, sunshine, you know, happy, bright, you know, city and state to this dark, disgusting, dirty, you know, sort of thing. So I have a feeling that's where he's going. And again, like I said, the narration thing was totally done, you know, almost in, you know, post-production because of the test screenings that the people were just kind of like, there's parts of this movie I don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked, or basically made Harrison Ford come back and do this narration.
Do you think, you know, I have to admit, the first version I remember seeing of this, because I was too young to see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember seeing it, you know, kind of in college and seeing the theatrical, or the, of course, the director's cut, because that was out on video and was the easiest to get your hands on. So I remember seeing it and you know, and still getting the movie, but, you know, finding it interesting how people interpreted things differently based off of what you saw. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably the first time I can recall watching the theatrical version. Mm-hmm. And I felt really that it dumbed the movie down.
Mm-hmm.
Because it almost spoon-fed you information where otherwise you had to come to conclusions on your own. Did anybody else have a feeling of that, or am I just kind of
overanalyzing? The weird thing is same boat here. I was too young to see it in the theater, obviously. I remember seeing the theatrical version of this, but it had to have been either an edited version that was on television.
Probably, yeah. That's true. Could have been that, too.
Or it was on cable that I saw it. Because I definitely do remember seeing the version with the narration, because this was one of the first DVDs I ever bought. In fact, I think it was the first DVD I ever bought. And the only version that was available was the director's cut. So I'm watching it, and I'm going, there's something missing in this movie. I could have sworn that they had Harrison Ford said stuff throughout the movie. And I'm like, it really threw me for a loop that I thought there was something wrong. Was there something wrong with my DVD? What's going on? So that started me down this whole, like, okay, what's going on with this film? And that was my first, you know, kind of foray into finding out all the drama about this. Because even the director's cut, quote unquote, director's cut, mm-hmm. is not what, I guess he was given the chance in 2000 to re-edit the film and bring it out the way he wanted, but he didn't have time to finish it. So the director's cut was really not his authorized, like, okay, this is my actual director's cut. That was just like, here's the amount of time you have, and we need it done by this time. And he was just kind of like, mm-hmm. well, he started, and then he was like, well, I can't finish this. And then they took it and re-released it anyway, which pissed him off.
So the final cut, the final cut
is actually, yeah, the final cut is supposed to be his quote unquote director's cut of the movie, you know. And it's all the different versions and I think it goes with what you said, Steve, is that once you take away that narration and the audience is left to sort of figure things out and interpret things their own way, I think that's when the whole huge controversy over, you know, is Deckard a replicant? Is he not a replicant? Sort of mm-hmm. came into play. And one of the silly little things that I think fed that the most was if you recall in the movie when he's talking to Bryant and they're going over all the tapes and he's showing him the pictures of all the replicants.
Mm-hmm.
He says that six of them escaped and one of them died in the escape. And that is an actual mistake. They had originally intended there to be another replicant in the movie.
It was they just never went back and edited that part.
It was a female character named Mary that they had cast in the whole nine yards, and they ended up cutting it out. And they never went back and fixed that scene. So the number of replicants that he says are on the planet doesn't match up with the amount that are in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that might have sparked the original, like, well, there's another replicant that they're not talking about it, you know, that is on the planet, and, you know, that it, you know, maybe it's Harrison Ford's character. And really, okay. depending on the version of the movie you watch, I think is what kind of pushes you in the directions of whether or not he's a replicant. And the funny thing about it is even the cast itself doesn't agree.
Yeah,
whether or not he is. Mm-hmm. Originally, I guess, when Harrison and Ridley were talking about the film, according to Harrison Ford, they had both decided that he was not going to be a replicant, that he was going to be human. And then later on, you know, probably 10 years after the movie had come out, in an interview, Ridley Scott said that, you know, that Deckard was a replicant. And, you know, Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer were like, well, no, that's not what we all kind of agreed on when we were shooting it. So it was just this huge mess. Everything about this movie was just a huge mess. But
But I think that that's part of the stuff that I'm talking about that could make it fun. Because I agree totally that I thought at the end, you know, it would find out, you know, I remember watching this early on and thinking that, you know, Rutger Hauer's character was going to be like, why are you fighting us? Right. You're one of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because I mean, of all the kind of cop people that you see in the movie, which there's not a whole lot, but of the ones you find, you know, he seems to have the one with the mission to get them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because clearly that's his job as a Blade Runner. But
right.
But it would make sense that they would use a replicant to find the replicants. Do you know what I mean? So it's all those kind of things. Yeah, exactly. You know, and how would he know if he wasn't one? Because just like everybody else, you
right?
Know?
Well, that's the main question when he asks. When he says, "How can she not know what she is?"
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's kind of hinting at that. There's lots of little things like that, like the fact that you got Leon who collects pictures, you got Rachel who has the fake pictures of her childhood, and then if you notice, Deckard's apartment,
he has a bunch of pictures
filled with old pictures.
Right, and that's another piece that made me think of that too, is that he was having these comments about why would all these people have pictures, and he has tons of them.
Yeah.
So you go,
Yeah, and they're old pictures about, you know, like really old, you know, stuff. So, yeah, there's tons of little things. And again, depending on what version you watch and the ending, and there's other little snippets here and there in the other versions that really, really, really point towards him being a replicant. But with that being said, with all the controversy, do you think that this could, you know, kind of turned out to be like the inception of its day, sort of like everybody had their own interpretation of, you know.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's a dream. It's not a dream. It's, you know.
No, he did make it all the way out. Or no, he was never out.
Mm-hmm.
With this.
I could totally see it. Again, based off of the version you see. Like, I don't think that the theatrical version allows for the freedom as much as others do.
Oh, no, it definitely directs you in a
certain... the freedom of interpretation, I should say.
Right. Oh, it definitely influences you to go with a certain decision. And it has a much happier ending out of all the other versions. You know, you actually see them escape, as it were.
Driving off into the mountains. Yeah.
Which was reused material from The Shining, actually. But
nice.
Yeah. All the other versions end with them kind of on the run, like beginning to leave, and then it just kind of cuts to credits. You know, so it's kind of like, ooh, you know, what's going to happen?
Do they get out or not? Yeah.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. So, Steve thinks that the voiceover dumbs it down. What about you, Jeff? Have you seen all the different versions?
You know, it's been a while since I've seen the director's cut, because I think that was the last version I really watched. I actually have all the versions in my nice little Blade Runner briefcase here. Mm. So I really should, like, this weekend watch all five of them.
Wow.
Just to kind of
have this marathon.
You're more hardcore than me. I don't think I could watch all of them in one sitting.
Oh, I'll watch the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy, the extended editions, which are the only editions I will watch, all in one day. Mm. I'm a person who loves story, and I like the longer movies, which tell a story in the time they need it, which is usually that longer period. I like the movies. I've said this before with a lot of things, is there are some that can tell a story in an hour and a half, and that's just the time they need. But some movies, they tell a story in an hour and a half, but they really needed two and a half hours to tell it, or even longer. I think Lord of the Rings had that. So I'm good with marathons. Of course, this will be a marathon of seeing essentially the same movie over and over again, just cut differently. So that would be a little bit different. But I can't remember too much. I kind of like the voiceover because it gives it a little bit more film noirish feel to it, because that's film noir, is having that voiceover. With the lighting was just not quite film noirish the way I wanted it, would have wanted it for. But that could just be because it wasn't necessarily shot to be film noirish. They just kind of changed that when they decided to add this voiceover.
Yeah, to me, my thing about it is that because this was the theatrical version was the first version I remember seeing. It's one of those things where it's like I fell in love with the film the first time I saw it, and that's the version that's sort of in my head. So that I expect to hear that voiceover, and when I don't, it's not that I don't enjoy the director's cut or the final cut or the work print or the international release or whatever the other heck different versions are out there, because I do enjoy all of them. In fact, I love the darker take on, you know, the characters and stuff in the final cut. But there's just a little thing in my head that goes, hey, there should be a voiceover here that's not there. And I kind of, I'm on the long lines of Jeff, where intentional or unintentionally done, it makes the film more of that sort of, you know, gritty, dark detective movie, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of enjoy it.
Well, I have a random question for you guys as we start kind of wind down here. Who's your favorite replicant?
My favorite
That's replicant. That's a good question.
I would have to say, I think Daryl Hannah,
the Pris, yeah,
yeah, I would concur. She's the master of the smoky eye. So,
I just loved it. She was so like, oh, thank you so much, but yet like devious behind your back. Right. Like
to me, she was the creepiest.
Opportunistic. Yeah, she was the opportunistic one, and I loved her Sonya Blade attack. And she had the best death. You know, flipping, getting shot. You know, and going crazy.
Freaks out.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you on the Pris.
The other interesting question I have for you guys is, and this was kind of thrown out there recently, I never really knew this, but since Ridley Scott directed Alien, there are a lot of people who say that these two movies are related, that they're in the same universe.
Could be.
Yeah.
I could probably see that.
I think it would totally work. The only thing we're missing in Blade Runner is that there's no Weyland-Yutani ads floating around. If they were CG a Weyland-Yutani ad on a couple buildings or on the blimp, I think it would totally fit. So, especially the off-world colonies, like, hey, you know, because, you know, aliens and all that, they were talking about colonists and going out and colonizing other planets and...
Yeah. Well, and they do have a replicant type person. True. I never thought about it.
And they called him a replicant or something like that while they was on board, and his model was a Nexus 6 or something.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm going to have to go back and watch Alien and see.
I don't think they actually referenced it. I don't think there was actually any cross-reference. But I could see those two movies in the same universe.
So, yeah, I just thought it was an interesting little blurb there. Somebody had said...
Mm-hmm. All right. So what have we learned from Blade Runner? We have learned these. In 8 years, Los Angeles will somehow merge with Detroit. In 8 years, we will have flying cars. The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long. Nothing is worse than having an itch that you can never scratch. It's time to die. It sucks to only have 4 years to live. And my special comment, Adama is good at origami. Yes, Edward James Olmos plays Gaff, the guy who does all those origami things when he's bored and is the crazy weird guy. So I didn't realize that. I think it was the goatee mustache thing that he had that... also, he was a lot younger than he was in Battlestar Galactica.
His face is a little bit younger in this movie, so...
Yeah, a little less leatherish.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I didn't realize it. I just pulled it up on IMDb, and I was like, Edward James Olmos? I didn't realize that.
What the toot?
Yeah, so I have to say, it's a sci-fi classic must have for any geek.
I would actually recommend getting the one of the packages that have the multiple versions in it.
Do they still have that available?
They do have, yes, they do. What was the actual? Because they don't have necessarily the case, the briefcase right. with the five discs that has the work print with it. Yeah. But
I just have the regular version that doesn't have the work print in it. So
I got the one with the briefcase. And you can get the final cut by itself, the director's cut by itself, and everything. But there is, I thought I saw a four disc collector's edition for $28.49 on Amazon as of today, which has one disc with the final cut, two discs with special features, and one disc which has the three remaining versions on it, the theatrical edition, the international release, and the director's cut.
I'm surprised they don't have a Blu-ray version that lets you branch off and watch whatever version you want.
Ooh, that would be cool. They do have, I do have listed here, a Blu-ray briefcase. Of course, it's used. But you can get a Blu-ray briefcase or an HD DVD briefcase if you still have. So it has many releases and everything, but yes, you can get a four disc collector's edition. And also you can rent it on Amazon Instant Video, which if you are currently an Amazon Prime member, you can just watch.
Nope.
Maybe not. No, modify it. That is not part of the, unlimited streaming. Mm. So I'm logged into my account and it doesn't say stream now.
Mm.
So,
gotcha.
Fortunately, not. But they that's some news we should have said. Amazon starts unlimited instant streaming for
Prime
members. So you have to be a Prime member. I am a Prime member, so in addition to Netflix, I get this, and hopefully they'll get better quality and more movies into their unlimited streaming. But so there you go.
All right. So what I tell everybody is that this is a very cerebral sci-fi film noir sort of movie, and I don't think anybody has sort of nailed that perfect combination as well as this movie has. And even though this movie is, you know, almost 30 years old, to me it still holds up effects-wise and shot-wise. You know, there's nothing in this movie that sticks out as being, oh my God, that's, you know, that's so 30 years ago.
I would totally agree. Always an amazing movie. However, I still believe this particular cut leaves some WTF moments, like we talked about. You know, like, why'd they have to say that? Because it's kind of obvious. Or, you know, maybe it's because, you know, for the first time watcher kind of thing. But. I think ultimately it all depends on which version you like and cherish. So, you know, it's worth exploring the different versions to kind of make your own decision about what you want. I'm kind of a diehard director's cut version. So that means that I need to see the final cut, which I haven't, you know, just to see if I like it better than the director's cut.
Yeah.
Excellent. So let's move on into the present.
Right here, right now. There is no other place I want to be.
Right here, right now, in theaters now, as I didn't mean to rhyme that. We already told Steven that it was in theaters. And that he should probably see it before this show, but somebody forgot to go see the movie. No, didn't forget.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, in all honesty, looking at the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, 56%, 68% of the audience liked it out of 1,000 ratings. So. So it's getting kind of somewhat mixed reviews. Is Unknown, starring Liam Neeson, Diane Kruger, and January Jones, directed by Jume Kulesara.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay.
So yeah, we talked about this trailer a while back, and I think all three of us pretty much hit the nail on the head here. We were able to figure out the mystery, the quote unquote mystery part of this movie from the trailer, you know, without ever seeing this movie. And pretty much every person that I have talked to who has actually gone to see this, which isn't too many people, only two or three other people that I know that have gone to see this, they all pretty much agree. And that is that this movie is sort of a non-science fiction version of Total Recall, which is another adaptation of a Philip K. Dick novel, I think, which is kind of
interesting. And a good movie.
Oh yeah, definitely a good movie. So they're, you know, when I saw this movie, the whole thing for me was, you know, the sort of the validation of our original prediction, which was, you know, oh, this is basically, we know exactly how this is going to end, and exactly, you know, it's not that his identity has been blah blah blah. It's, you know, so it was all pretty much laid out. So with that being said, to me, once I kind of got over that whole, okay, this is Total Recall sort of thing, the movie itself, I mean, obviously there's the actors and actresses in this movie are decent, you know. Mm-hmm. They put in a good performance. You know, we also have, he wasn't top billed, but, you know, we have Frank Langella's in this movie as well. Everyone did a pretty good, you know, pretty decent performance. The only thing that really kind of is a letdown is the majority of the story, and only because it's nothing too original. You know, it's got that sort of been there, done that.
Been there, done that, bought the t-shirt.
Taste on it, yeah. You know. So, I mean, did you have any revelations when you saw this, Jeff?
Not really. I mean, you know, it's one of those movies where it didn't completely pull me in. Like, I wasn't sucked in and just and interested in the movie in the entire time. In fact, my mind drifted several times during this movie. I don't want to say it's a bad movie, because it's not a bad movie. It's really more of an okay movie. Mm-hmm. It has great ideas. The actors did a great job. I agree with you. The acting was fantastic, but there was something, I don't know if it was the script or actually the directing, the cinematography, or something outside of that. I mean, outside of the story and the acting. Because that was where the big strong points were.
Mm. I didn't have any issues with the cinematography. If I had any issues with the cinematography, it would have been that while I was watching it, I'm going, wow, somebody watched the Bourne Identity right before they watched this movie, because it had the same sort of look to it. You know, same sort of feeling.
I could see that from the trailer.
Yeah.
You know.
Liam Neeson... See, I have this thing with Liam Neeson. I think he's a good actor, but I think depending on the director, I think he can kind of cross that line into overacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And luckily enough, in this one, he wasn't too much of an overactor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I enjoyed his performance, and the cab driver, I thought she did a really good job as well.
Gina?
Yeah,
Diane Kruger.
Yes, but again, the main problem with this movie is, again, we're it's kind of like that. You know, we've seen this before. That didn't really, until the very, very, very end, it didn't really do anything new. And not that the ending did something new, but at least at the end there was a plot twist that I wasn't expecting. You know, so that I think kind of helped. Anytime a movie does something that I don't expect, I'm pleasantly surprised, and I can usually see the movie in a better light after that. Because if a movie is completely predictable and I figured it out, in this case, before I ever saw the movie, it's usually not a good thing. I usually kind of go into the theater with a very sort of, why am I here, why am I watching this sort of attitude, because I'm like, I've already figured it out. Why did I just waste, you know, $10 to come see this? So at least at the very end, there was a little bit of a redemption in terms of a surprise, you know. So I like that, you know.
Yeah, and I'm it's still to me a little eh.
Yeah.
You know, the twist and like make me go, oh my God.
It's not really that kind of a twist. It's kind of, it's more of like a, oh, okay.
Like, oh, okay. It makes, I gotcha.
That makes sense, you know. It's sort of like the whole movie, they misdirect you. Into something else. So, and not what we, it's, you know, the parts that we had figured out, we nailed.
All right. Shall we just say it? Should we just say what the twist is and spoil it?
Sure.
There is no Martin.
Well, I don't think that's not the twist I'm talking about, you goof.
What?
That's the part we predicted.
Okay, but
to me, the twist is the fact of who the target is at the end.
I didn't quite think of it that way.
Yeah. Well, the throughout the whole movie, they lead you to believe that they're building up to assassinate a particular person.
At the very end,
you find out that that's not at all the person that they're going after, and they're going after for somebody else who happens to be in proximity to that person. So, to me, that was the twist that I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I totally, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, so he must be a spy who can't remember that he was, you know, pretending to be this person who doesn't exist, and now he thinks he's existing, and that part, that was all.
Total Recall.
Yeah. I haven't seen Total Recall in forever. I think I saw it once, like back in 1998 or something.
Oh my gosh.
As I said, I haven't seen it in forever. It's been a really long time. We need to put that on our list.
You need to see that. You need to see The Running Man again. You need to see all those.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen The Running Man.
Jeffrey.
Wow. Our list of potentials is going to be much longer. I haven't seen
one of the best cheesy 80s sci-fi action flicks ever made. Ugh.
I haven't seen Running Man.
Wow.
Oh, The Running Man is the best.
Total Recall.
I have the 25th anniversary DVD on that one.
Awesome.
First Blood. I haven't seen that.
Wait, what? How many years to anniversary?
25th, I think.
It can't be 25th.
I remember.
It came out in 1987.
Must have been the 20th. Maybe it was the 20th. Sorry. My bad.
I was like, wait a second.
I convinced myself it was the 25th, only to find out that it wasn't.
How I love me some Mauricio Conchita Alonso.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
And Richard Dawson.
And Richard, yes. Richard Dawson was epic. Yaphet Kotto in it. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Anyways. So, yeah, unknown. Yeah.
Not really too much to say about the movie.
Yeah, it's all right. It's not bad. You know, I think it's okay to see in the theaters, but if you want to wait, you know, that's fine. You know, necessarily when those what go watch it a matinee.
If you accidentally rent the movie Unknown that came out in 2006, it might not necessarily be a bad thing. You know? Because when I you guys know this. I told you when I first put this on the list that, like, the trailer and everything I had picked out was the wrong trailer. It was the trailer for the 2006 one. Funny enough, the embed, the trailer that I found online for the actual movie had the wrong information in it. It had the information from the 2006 version in it.
Nice.
Yeah, so, yeah. So maybe the 2006 version is the version we're all supposed to watch.
Anyways. Yeah, so a couple things we learned from this, as we said, we don't have much to say about this movie, is
Ask enough questions and the man is who is lying will change his story. Germans are good at forgetting. Sentiment is always the first thing to go. Don't get your cyanide mixed up with your afternoon tea. And there are obviously no patrol cars anywhere in Berlin.
Yeah, did you notice that? Anytime they had something going on, they're like racing through the streets. No police anywhere to stop them. Yeah,
yeah, and like the only time you really see anything is when somebody goes crashing into the river.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's a movie with a nice little twist, or kind of nice little two twists, maybe. And a resolution. Just wish it was better written or directed or something. There was just something off for me.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not brilliant. It's not horrible. And once I got over the whole comparing it to Total Recall thing, because that I just had to let that go, it was entertaining. I wasn't bored. I didn't fall asleep, you know, during it. So actors did a good job. You know, and if you can stick with it long enough and you're not bored by it, there is an actual twist at the end if you don't listen to this and get spoiled. So, yeah. What about you, Steve?
I was a bad, bad, bad movie reviewer. Life got in the way. I repent.
Yes.
That's all I can say.
Well, you know what? I'm going to ask you to try to go see it and get back with us and give us a more, at least if you liked it, yay or nay.
You don't pay me. I'm going to try to make it up for you. I'm going to try to make it up. I promise. I'll do everything I can.
We're going to make you watch Titanic.
No! Oh.
That's
2 out of 3.
Evil Toe. And wrong.
Veto. Yeah. That will
evil
definitely...
and wrong.
I still want to veto.
I'll let you pick something else, but I guess that could be a penalty, though.
You have to watch a movie that you hate.
You have to watch a movie that you refuse to watch if you forget to if you don't get out to see the movie.
I'm still going to be refusing to see a movie that I refuse to watch in June here. So
or you completely forget that we're recording. You know.
No,
oh
yeah.
Yeah, nobody's ever done that.
So I'm the only one who hasn't forgotten we're recording. I'm the only one who hasn't screwed up.
You better be knocking on wood, buddy.
Yeah. Anyways.
Mr. Day Off soon. I'm gonna be calling you going, are you awake? We're supposed to be recording.
Yeah, I'll probably be awake by 6 or 7 o'clock at night. I can guarantee you that. I'll probably just be skinning or something.
Yeah, we'll probably just be woken up from playing WoW all night.
Well, no, I'm not going to stay up that late playing WoW because by 1, 2 o'clock, we're done. Anyways, moving on from
enough about you
into the future.
Cause it's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away, it's gonna be the future soon.
In the future, we've got the source code. You have entered the. You are in the source code.
Not to be confused with The Matrix.
Yeah, starring, I flipped away, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michelle
Monaghan.
Farminga.
It's Jake Houlihan. Do you remember the interview? Did you ever see the interview with that he did? Where he pronounced his name and he said his name is Houlihan.
Oh, really?
And then, so they pronounced it. Yeah, it was a joke. No, he said Hula. It was a joke. And then later on, someone interviewed Maggie and said, so we understand that your name is actually pronounced Hula Hay. And she's like, who the hell told you that? Your brother. Oh, he would. It was basically like.
Oh, that explains everything.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
All right. So here's the idea. There's a guy who blows up a train. The CIA wants to find out who did it. They've got this whole computer thingy, quantum leap device
which allows people to go back in time into another man's body for the last 8 minutes of his life. And not just going back in his body in the last 8 minutes of his life, but also be able to control him and communicate with everybody that's in there and as if
but
he would
be
actually
seen as the person, but be seen as the person.
Right.
A la Quantum Leap. Yeah. Right.
But so which kind of confuses me because if you're going into the last 8 minutes of somebody's life, aren't you going to see exactly what he does and hear exactly what the guy saw in the last 8 minutes of his life? Because you can't change. They say you can't change the events in the source code or whatever it is from the thing. How can that happen? And unless he's actually really going back in time and actually change events.
Well, see, you just hit the nail on the head of what makes the want to see this movie, because I'm watching the trailer. It starts off with a kind of like, we have this computer simulation that we can stick you in, and it, you know, puts you in the last 8 minutes of this person's life. So it's very much along the kind of like, you're going to see everything that he did and whatever. And then it seems like it sort of morphs as it goes on, as the time he keeps going back and doing it again, and they keep asking him questions like, you know, did you see anything? Did you talk to any, you know? And he's just like, no. And he's like, well, you have to go back again and do it. And he's just like, oh God, really? You know? So it's like, that's what made me say this is like a dark version of Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Where you're reliving the same moment over and over again, but at the end of it, you always die,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's kind of a bummer.
But ultimately, again, it's kind of that Total Recall thing as well, where you're trying to figure out, is it real or is it a training exercise or is it a...
Well, the big thing for me is when the trailer starts hinting at the fact that he's going to try, he falls in love with it, or I don't know if he falls in love with her, but he obviously has a connection with this woman that he meets on the train. And it's sort of the Adjustment Bureau kind of thing where he's like, dead set, he's going to save her somehow. And they're telling him, you know, oh, you can't save her. What's, you know, happened has happened, and you can't change anything that's in this source code thing. You know,
but then the question comes up is, when he goes back in time, why is he still able to make his own decisions, ask his own questions, tell her, I'm not the Sean guy. I am Coulter Stevens. And... I have no idea who you are, but how can he do that if he's going to a time which cannot be changed?
Right. So that's what makes me interested in seeing it and see if they're actually able to write themselves out of the crazy quantum entangled box that they've put themselves in. So,
and it would just be weird if it's more of like, well, the computer extrapolates everything that happened during that time and is giving an actual simulation. It's not really going back in time, and it's showing what could be, not really what was.
Right.
Which means, how is he going to find these people? It could have come up from his mind. The computer's completely wrong about what he extrapolates, etc.
And probably the important thing to mention here is that there's a tension element in here in the fact that there's going to be another bombing in 6 hours. So they have 6 hours to figure out who's responsible for it so they can try to stop it. That's the whole reason why they're doing it. It's not like they're just – well, at least that's what they say. That's why they're doing it, you know, in the trailer. So – I thought it was
looks
interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when I saw it. I never heard or seen a trailer for it before. I don't even know how I came across it on a website somewhere, and I'm like, ooh, science fiction movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, what? You know, and...
oh, I've been seeing
but it does,
movies for a while now.
But it does... this is the first time I've seen it, too. But it does come off very Bourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I could see where maybe he's trying to make a big play for Bourne.
Let's see if he can pull it off. Well, maybe there's the production companies are related, or somebody saw his.
Could be.
Saw a trailer for the movie, and that's how he's up for the role. Hey, I could see him as Bourne. I could see it.
I could see him better than Tobey Maguire.
Oh yeah, I could see anybody better than Tobey Maguire.
Still rather see Kellan Lutz.
Anyways,
yeah.
So interesting feels like it might be a good movie, but I have this weird feeling that it might go horribly wrong.
I think it looks entertaining. It raises some questions enough for me to want to go see it. So that's why I've put it on our list to go see.
Ding, ding.
Agreed. Again, I think it's funny we use all the same things I was thinking too. Very Groundhog's Day meets Quantum Leap with a higher budget, you know, kind of throw in some Matrix, you know, a little bit of all that stuff. Looks interesting and seems like something I'd enjoy. So I'd give it a shot.
Well, excellent. Coming attraction. So next week we are going to see Top Secret from 1984, which we've mentioned several times before. We are going for the intermission next week, by the way. We're going to be talking about our top five spoof movies. So anybody who's listening, please let us know what are your favorite spoof movies. Shoot us an email. We'll be talking about that in a second. We're going to actually see Black Swan. Yeah, it's been out for a while, but hey, we're having a bad week next week. So we're going to go with Black Swan. And in the future, we're going to be talking about a trailer, which I'm not going to actually comment about my feelings on right now, Your Highness. So speaking of those questions about what's your favorite spoof movies, there are plenty of ways of get us that information. Go to movies.cubsoutloud.com, leave a comment on our blog. Also, you can email us at colmovies@gmail.com. You know what? Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to actually hear you for the show at 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, which is essentially pulling everything from Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, pop onto iTunes. Please give us a review. We would like to see those reviews on our iTunes page. And that's it for this reel. So we'll be seeing you next week. So for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, take care.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.